Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
He calls me and lets me know that he has just booked Hamilton. He's going to play Alexander Hamilton himself for 1 month on Broadway. And then the family is moving to Chicago. And he's going to open the production of Hamilton in Chicago as Alexander Hamilton. Like, this is lottery winning lifestyle. Like, I cannot, there was before he got that call and there was after. However, that exact same week, and my daughter was diagnosed with epilepsy.
Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. Michaela and I here are joined by Kelly Cervantes. Kelly, do you say that with an accent at all, or is it just like...
I am as white girl as they come. I just married a lovely Hispanic man. I say Kelly Cervantes, and he says it with an accent sometimes, but no. I just married into a wonderful last name.
There you go. Well, my mom's maiden name is Hernandez. So, see, I can do it. So
ooh, you can do it. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I could. I feel I'm too white. I am Irish, English, Scottish.
Wow. All right. Well, we are thrilled that you are here with us. I'm going to say it right off the bat that you mentioned this to us when we first started talking, is that you don't necessarily have a specific belief in God, in a one almighty God, right? It's just, anyway, you can kind of explain that, but I'm still so happy that you're here with us. Obviously, you know that we do have a belief in God, and you and I spoke on the phone, and I expressed to you that there are so many people out there. Nobody believes the same things, right?
Right.
It's all different, and we're all individuals, and we all need each other still at the same time, and we can learn from each other and grow. And so I'm excited for you to be able to be here with us and to teach and to share your experiences, and hopefully we can learn and grow together.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you for having me and for being open to my journey and to my story. You know, I grew up Presbyterian, very much involved in the church. And I guess as I got older, more and more of my friends came from different religions and faith systems. And I became fascinated with faith and religion. And I guess over the years, sort of developed my own, I mean, it's not my own system. I think I just sort of picked and choose different pieces of different faiths and religious systems that really spoke to me. And But a huge piece of that is this idea of the spirit or the soul or this whatever that is, there is whatever it is that makes us human, whatever it is that that spark that you can't explain, that my mother-in-law says, whatever it is that makes us more than just like a bunch of atoms, right? And what happens to that when we die or when a loved one dies? And I love science, and science says that energy doesn't die, that it just keeps going on. So what happens to that energy? And for that reason, I believe that all of my loved ones are still with me. And that is, they are, and everyone, they are my collective God. They are my, my sort of spiritual advisors, I suppose, in some way. And I feel like I know when I'm on the right track, when they send me little signs, which my daughter loves to do.
Yeah, and you might get into this, but when you and I spoke on the phone, it made my heart so happy that you told me that she was basically giving you the okay through wind chimes. You said that she speaks through wind chimes quite a bit, and that that really touched my heart, that the wind chimes were going off when
they sure were. She was like, "Mom, do this. Talk to them."
I just got full chills.
Yeah, that made me so happy.
Yeah.
Well, Kelly, I'd love for you to tell everybody a little bit about yourself. And you are kind of famous as an artist, or an author. How many books do you have?
I have 2 books now. Yeah. Okay. I'm on, I think, my 4th career at this point. I've sort of lived all over the country. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. Born in St. Louis. I lived in Mexico City for a minute, Boston, New York City, Chicago, New Jersey. I've really been all over. And then I started out as an actress and then worked in hospitality. And then in the exact same week, my husband, Miguel Cervantes, who we met, we were both actors. His career started going significantly better than mine. And it turns out that, like, when you want to start a family and, I don't know, buy a house or something, that it's a whole lot better if one of you has stable, secure income and health insurance. And the acting industry does not always supply that. So I bit the bullet and got a big girl job selling and coordinating events for a Tom Colicchio restaurant in New York City, the Mr. Bald Top Chef himself. And Miguel continued to work. He was a singer and dancer and booked several Broadway shows. And then he started auditioning for this, tiny itty bitty little show called Hamilton.
Never heard of it.
We honestly didn't think much of it. He had auditioned for In the Heights a bajillion times and never booked that show. And that's the exact same creative team. But this time the auditions were going really well. And he calls me and lets me know that he has just booked Hamilton. He's going to play Alexander Hamilton himself for 1 month on Broadway. And then the family is moving to Chicago. And he's going to open the production of Hamilton in Chicago as Alexander Hamilton. Like, this is lottery winning lifestyle. Like, I cannot, there was before he got that call and there was after. However, that exact same week, and my daughter was diagnosed with epilepsy. My daughter, Adelaide, she was 7 months old at the time. And with normal pregnancy, everything was fine, but there were signs early on, like she wasn't gaining weight like she should. And she was diagnosed with low muscle tone. And so we'd started seeing a neurologist. She was getting early intervention services, but I was resolute in that she was going to be fine. That she had to be fine, because my pregnancy before, my son Elvis, we had found out at our 20-week ultrasound that he wasn't going to survive birth. He didn't, his heart was taking up his entire chest cavity and he didn't have lungs. It was as black and white as it comes. He was going to die. And, I felt like getting that news was our like lightning strike, that was like the horrible thing that was going to happen in our life. And because, and the doctors told us, they were like, what this genetic thing that Elvis has, they called it a lightning strike. They said that this is not going to happen again. The chances of something like this happening again. And so Adelaide had to be fine. She had to be okay because Elvis wasn't. And so I believed that, and I lived in denial for a long time. And then the seizures started, and then she got the epilepsy diagnosis. And Miguel had actually left us in the hospital for his final Hamilton audition. She was getting all sorts of tests, and so it was all still sort of a blur. But then also to like add to the chaos, that exact same week was my last week working for Tom Colicchio's group. And I was going to start at a new restaurant group the next week. It was a big job opportunity for me. Director of sales. I was so excited. And then my family was moving to Chicago and my daughter has epilepsy and she can't really go to daycare anymore. And so I went from being my family's primary breadwinner to a you know, stay-at-home mom slash nurse slash therapist slash pharmacist quite literally overnight. And that was a huge challenge for me. I've always been very career driven and gotten a lot personally out of that, and I love my family dearly. We have we had our son Jackson, who was 4 at the time, but it was a tough transition. And we moved to Chicago, and we found an incredible community of people there. I just feel so fortunate that Chicago was where our family landed. We had great community in New York and New Jersey where we were living before, but Chicago embraced us. The hospital systems were incredible. And we found an amazing community of friends that lifted us up, some nonprofit organizations that I was able to volunteer with and work with. Unfortunately, Adelaide's condition continued to decline. We never got control of her seizures. Different ailments and symptoms kept piling on, and it was ultimately decided when she was about 3.5 years old that we never had an overarching diagnosis for her. We had done every test, but she remained undiagnosed. And after back-to-back MRIs, the doctors determined that whatever was causing her variety of symptoms, that it was neurodegenerative. And at this point, there was nothing else that they could do. And we were faced with the horrible decision of figuring out when my nonverbal, nonmobile daughter, who still had every way of communicating with us, by the way, like she may not have used words, but like if her big brother was squeezing her too hard, she would swat him across the face. And like, she didn't have the best like coordination. So for her to be able to make contact was pretty impressive. And she would, She hated like traditional baby music, like Baby Shark. She would kick and she would scream and she would close her eyes and she would shut down. But the second you turned on Frank Sinatra, her entire demeanor changed. Her eyes would open. She would calm. She would still. So she still had every way of communicating with us, but it is still incredibly challenging as a parent and caregiver to determine, you know, quality of life. And ultimately we made the decision that to enter hospice, and hospice came into our home, and that was the best gift that I ever could have asked for, because while I had nursing help, when hospice entered, for the first time in her entire life, I was able to be her mom, like just her mom. Every other part of her life had revolved around her medical care. And But with nursing and with hospice, I got to just lay in bed with her and read her stories and paint her nails and do all of the things that I dreamed of doing with my daughter that that I had been too tired or too wrapped up in fighting with health insurance to be able to do. And then ultimately she passed away on October 12th, 2019, just 5 days before her fourth birthday. And literally overnight, I felt like I was forced into retirement again from this job that I had resented at first, but I had grown to love. And I will never in my life have a job that is fulfills me as much as that one does. And I do, it was a job. Like I think it's very easy for people to think about, you know, parenting and because she was sick. And so you're just being a mom. But when you are a medical caregiver for a sick child, it is so much more than just being a parent. It was a 24/7 job. And I'm so grateful that I got to do it and that I got to be her mom. And I'm still her mom, though at this point, I think she's teaching me so much more than I ever got to teach her.
Oh, it just makes me so emotional. You have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
You hear this whole thing, being able to sit and listen to stories all the time. Before we started all of this, we know that people go through things, right? Everybody yeah. knows that life is hard for everybody, but we kind of tend to put ourselves in this little box and think, my heart, nobody's going through what I'm going through, right? nobody understands what I'm dealing with. And for us to be able to sit with incredible people from around the country and hear their stories and to sit and to hear some of the hard that you've been through, it helps me to love people so much more and to understand and to realize that I'm not the only one going through difficult things. And even though I never really thought that, but I think kind of internally we always kind of have those thoughts and those feelings, you know, and
I like to say that we're just not that special. And I it sounds a little bit harsh. And I think that we're all still special in the way that like Mr. Rogers on PBS said that we were. But in that while our experience may be unique to us. Not everyone's husband was Hamilton and you're also navigating a sick child. Like that story is unique to me. It's unique to my family. But the way that I felt, the thoughts that were going through my head, that is not unique to me. That is human. And I think that the more that we share our stories and that we listen to other people's stories, it just makes us more human.
Absolutely. Did you have something?
I was, but if you...
No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask how that experience was for your marriage. I mean, going through that while he's, you know, I can't even imagine. How was that for you?
Yeah, there was a lot. There was in the beginning when he first got the role and he felt so much pressure, because this was Hamilton and he was leading the show and it is, they have to be athletes. Like he's rapping and he's singing and he's dancing for essentially 3 hours straight. And so he had to take care of himself so much. And meanwhile, I'm at home and I'm taking care of Adelaide. And I resented him a lot in the beginning until we could like really figure out what that delineation of labor was going to look like. That was hard. Mm-hmm. That was like the first real test that we went through. And really it boiled down to me having to accept my new role and position in the family, that I was grieving the loss of my independence and freedom being a working mom. There's a lot of, Miguel would go out for a drink after a show and I couldn't do that because I couldn't leave the kids home alone, but I also couldn't get a babysitter who wasn't a nurse. So it was hard. We finally found that balance and I found acceptance. And in my new role, in my new life, and we found time together to sort of process together. A lot of times it was at night when the house was finally quiet and it's just the two of us laying in bed in the dark. It feels safer when you can't always see the other person's face. And we said the scary things out loud. I think that was incredibly important to us, making sure that we were both on the same page in regard to Adelaide's care, in regard to our son Jackson's well-being. We also, and this may be TMI, but we like scheduled a sex night because the physical intimacy of a relationship, of a marriage, like that is so important. And it can be really hard when your life is crazy. So that would like, we scheduled sex and that was like 20-year-old me would have been horrified. But 30-something-year-old me knew that I wanted to keep my marriage strong. And then... I thought that everything was like that we were great and that we were in sync. And then Adelaide died and we responded it to her death so differently. It shocked me. And I that was probably a little naive on my part. I am a very emotional person. I call it werewolfing, where in those like early days of grief, like all of the emotion would just bubble out of me. I had zero control. We could be in the grocery store and I would be like a puddle on the ground. And that was just, but Miguel's grief was very private. He, within a couple weeks of Adelaide passing, I never really saw him cry again. And to me, that meant that he wasn't grieving because I couldn't see it. But the reality was that he was still grieving. It was just something that he preferred to do privately. And it took us to marriage counseling to be able to have that open conversation about how we were grieving differently and what each of us needed from the other as we continued to just survive and heal. And for me, I just needed him to tell me. And so in the beginning, it was awkward. Not long after Adelaide died, we moved back to New Jersey from Chicago because Miguel had been offered Hamilton on Broadway. And so we're in a new house and he's like, well, I was regrouting the shower in the basement and I started thinking about Adelaide and how she would never live in this new house. And I was crying and, just thinking about her and he's telling me this as he's pouring a cup of coffee the next morning, but it meant the world to me to just know that I wasn't alone in still feeling, broken. And then I think that there was also some grace that I needed to give. I think there's a lot of pressure in today's culture to have our partners be our everything, to fill all of our needs. And I think that's wildly unrealistic. There's no way that I can fill all of my husband's needs nor his mine. And so sometimes you have to figure out what you can outsource, because if your sink is broken and your partner can't fix it, you don't get mad, you call a plumber, right? So when do you need to call the plumber? And for me, it was you know, around the anniversary of Adelaide's, the 1 year anniversary of her passing, I knew it was going to be really hard. And Miguel is just, I love him dearly. And he is so wonderful in so many ways. But being with me in that dark, gritty grief while he is also grieving, that I knew that that was not something that he was going to be great at. And so instead of setting him up for failure and me to be upset, I called my best friend from Chicago who knew and loved Adelaide and I knew was going to be missing and grieving her too. And she flew out and we laid in bed and watched, you know, Schitt's Creek marathons, and we laughed, and then, you know, and then we cried, and then she would make me laugh again. And it was just what I needed. And so I think that we have to, I think the key for Miguel and I's marriage has been, you know, loving each other's strengths, but acknowledging when, and it's not weaknesses, it is acknowledging when certain needs of yours can't be met by your partner, accepting that, and then going and finding alternate places for those needs to be met. And I think that that has only made our marriage and our relationship that much stronger.
Well, I think that a lot of people, I mean, we hear it all the time, people mourn differently.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of men, they might have that silent guilt in a sense.
Yes.
Especially
yes.
in something like that. And I don't know if he ever was able to open up about that, but I can only imagine. I'm putting myself into his shoes as well and thinking of everything that he had to do, and he was trying to, you know, navigate that as well. And it's so hard what you guys both went through.
100%. He expressed to me that he felt like he didn't have the right to grieve in the way that I did because I was the one who was with her all day, every day. And, you know, but that said, if he hadn't been at the theater, if he hadn't been performing, if he, like, we needed him to be making the money and to be providing the health insurance, and he was there when he could be, and a phenomenal father, it was just different. And so, yeah, that was absolutely something that we had to work through, is, you know, telling him that he didn't need to feel guilty, that he was the best father in his capacity that he could have been.
I don't know if you know this, but basically everything that you just told in the last 10 minutes with your guys' marriage and relationship is all incredible, beautiful advice for any couples, any relationship, really. When you're 16 and you envision your husband, right, you think of this perfect Prince Charming, like just fills every single box that you need. I never thought about my husband, but I thought about my wife, right? But there is no human being that can really live up to everything that you envision in a partner. Yeah. And understanding and realizing that, like you said, they're not weaknesses, but it's just maybe a character or a personality, right? We all have different personalities, and there's things that we thrive at and things that we're not so good at. And in a relationship, for you, especially in those difficult times where you're grieving, to be able to see that, and maybe you didn't always have those same feelings, it took a little while to get there, but to understand that your spouse isn't perfect,
yeah,
but he loves me, right? And he's doing his best, and he's doing, I can't get inside my wife's head, right? We are man and woman, completely different. We think different. We, you know, everything is different. And I just know that she's different and she thinks differently than I do. And there's things that drive me crazy. And there's things that drive her absolutely crazy about me, you know, but and I've seen so many relationships that fail because they have certain expectations in, and then you just kind of drift farther and farther apart when really, like you said, have a best friend that fills a box that your husband can't, you know, and it I just loved all of that. And if we can swallow our pride a little bit and get to that point and realize I'm not perfect, she's not perfect, we need to work together. And yeah, I just love everything that you said. It was beautiful, especially we've never lost a child, right? We haven't been able to have our own biological children, but I can see how that is something that can just drive a wedge into a relationship. And so I'm so happy to see that you've been able to probably come closer together through all of it and learn things about each other. Speaking on that, I would love to hear about how Adelaide and maybe Elvis, I don't know if he's been able to show up and
Elvis is quieter. He comes every once in a while. I'll hear an Elvis song or something that's like out of the blue and completely, you know, inappropriate for the occasion. And I'm like, oh, okay, buddy, I hear you. I you're still with me. I know you are. You know, it's interesting with Adelaide. I think my grief was so all encompassing after she died. People would tell me, so when I was, I guess the very first sign she ever gave me when I was pregnant with her, I had a dream that I was surrounded by ladybugs. And I woke up from, it was a nap. I woke up from the nap and I immediately called my mother. And originally our plan had been, I had planned a safari themed nursery for Elvis. And we were just going to use that for Adelaide. And then I called my mom and I was like, scrap the safari themed nursery, return everything. We're going with ladybugs. And so from the time that I was pregnant with Adelaide, she had always been my Adeladybug. Ladybugs everywhere. I'm like usually covered in a ladybug necklace. I have a ladybug tattoo. And so after she died, I kept waiting and looking and expecting for ladybugs, and I never saw them. And people would text me pictures that they had seen ladybugs. And I love that now. Now it means the world to me when people do that, because I know that they're remembering her. And I do believe that she's saying hi to them, or that she's saying hi to me through them. She knows I need encouragement, or there's something that's happening, and I will receive a text from someone or a picture. You know, they'll be like, oh, I just saw a ladybug. Or even my most recent book came out, The Luckiest, and I had done a few podcasts promoting that book. And I want, like, no joke, 3 or 4 of the people who interviewed me told me that they had seen a ladybug in a weird place in the last, like, 2 to 3 days prior to us having our conversation. So that was the biggest way that I got the signs through other people. But it was so excruciating because I wanted her to come to me. But I think that I was blocked in a way. I think my grief was, I didn't just lose my daughter. I lost my job. I lost my purpose. I was so depressed. I was really struggling. I was surviving. And I was, I didn't want to heal because I thought that healing meant that I had to like move on or leave her behind. And I couldn't do that because that was my daughter. It wasn't until it was a little over a year after she passed away. It was actually the night before President Joe Biden's inauguration. And regardless of what you think about him politically, that man knows and understands grief. He lost a wife and an infant in a car crash. He lost an adult son to brain cancer. And he had this COVID-19 memorial service before he was inaugurated. And he said, to heal, we must remember. And I had never heard of healing in that way, because I lived my life at that point in fear of forgetting her, because I time is a memory thief. And regardless of what you do, like, memories fade and there's nothing that you can really do to hold on to them other than write, which is what I turn to. But I loved that. To heal, we must remember. I was that. Yes, healing meant remembering. It meant bringing her forward into our future with us. And no, she wasn't physically with us, but how could I keep her memory alive? How could I keep her with us? And so...
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
In the beginning, it was little, and there's pictures of her all over our house. But then it became a little more important when it was about 2 years after Adelaide died. We got a phone call telling us, so we knew that Adelaide's condition, whatever it was genetic. We would later find out that it was hereditary, and there was a 1 in 4 chance that if we had another biological child, that the child would be something like Adelaide was. So biological children became not an option for us to add to our family. But then, so we started looking into adoption. We were going to adopt from Colombia, and we had gone through the paperwork, the exhaustive process, and then, and mostly looking through at a foreign country because I, foster care system, I was terrified of bringing a child into our home. And then obviously foster care, the goal is to reunite them with their biological parents. And I couldn't do that to our family again. I couldn't fall in love with another child. I couldn't bring another child into our home to be a sibling to my son and then have to say goodbye to that. I wasn't strong enough for that. I think that foster care parents are just angels and have hearts of steel, because that is, it's such a beautiful thing. And it is not something that I was strong enough for at that time. And, but we did get a call, saying that there was actually a little girl in Texas. And I won't really get into very many details because that's Anessa, our daughter's story to share. But whenever she is ready, she's 6, so not yet. But she was 2.5 at the time. And we picked her up and we brought her into our family. And you know, it took a couple years, but the adoption was finalized and now she's 6. And, but when she came into our home, and I was so excited to have another child to love and to raise. And, like if there's one thing that Miguel was like put on this earth to do, it is to be a dad. Like he is the freaking best dad ever. And so I was just so excited to give him this opportunity to help raise another child. But I struggled because here I have this now 2.5-year-old daughter that we're bringing into our home. And she would never know her sister, Adelaide. And I struggled with this idea of like that I was replacing Adelaide. There were so many complicated feelings around that. And Anessa became the most incredible conduit for me to connect with Adelaide. I think maybe 6 months after we had Anessa, and I was going through a box, and it was just a bunch of stuff that had come with us from Chicago and I had never unpacked. And inside that box was a wind chime. And Anessa, you know, toddles over and she's asking me what's in the box. And I tell her that it's a wind chime. Someone gave it to us after Adelaide died, but I never hung it up. And I asked her if she wanted to help me hang it up. And she said, yes, we go out to our back patio and we hang it up. I don't really think anything else of it until a few days later. And we're walking up the back steps. I'm bringing Anessa home from preschool. And it was a still day. Like, there was no breeze at all, except for this one gust that knocks the wind chime. And I sort of look at it and I smile and I'm like, oh, that's sweet. Anessa turns around and she looks at it and she goes, oh, hi, Adelaide. And she keeps walking to our back door and she stops and she turns around and she looks at me very seriously. She says, Mommy, you need to say hi to her. Adelaide is saying hello to us. Hmm. Oh, and I was like, oh. And in that moment, I realized that because I was learning how to heal through remembering, that I was bringing Adelaide with us into the future. And so, yes, you know, Anessa and Adelaide will never know each other physically, but they 100%, there is no doubt in my mind that they know each other and that they have their own dialogue. Earlier this year, we went to Disney World. Miguel and I were performing. We have a show on grief that we do together, which is actually funnier than it sounds. we were doing the show in Orlando and I was like, okay, well, we have to take the kids to, you know, Disney or Universal or something while we're here. And so I decided to take the kids to Hollywood Studios and because they had rides that like Jackson, who was now, you know, 12, would like, and there was something that Anessa would like. And I was like, all right, we'll do that. But for me, I knew it was going to be hard because several years before we had taken Jackson and Adelaide to Disney World and Adelaide was having horrible seizures, like 10 to 20 minute long seizures, screaming, terrible, like awful seizures. But they were our normal. And I was insistent that we would continue to live life as normally as possible. And so we went to Disney World, even though she was having aggressive seizures. And I would just like cross my fingers and hope that she would have them before we did like the character meet and greets, because that was always Adelaide's favorite. She would open up her eyes. I don't know if it's because like the heads were so big and so she could like actually see them, but she would like open her eyes and engage and reach out for them. Like, she clearly really enjoyed that part of being at the parks. But I knew that going to Hollywood Studios was going to be tough because she had one of the worst seizures that I can remember while we were walking through, like entering the park. And so but I did good. We walked into the park, we passed the spot where she had the seizure, and I was like, I did it. I'm good. This is great. And I was so proud of myself. And then the boys are going off to do another roller coaster, and Anessa really wants to meet Minnie and Mickey. And so we're waiting in line to meet Minnie and Mickey. And of course, she's like climbing on the ropes and she's all over the place and wondering why she can't see them yet. And just, you know, a whirling dervish. And then she stops and she says, Mommy, you have to come here and look. And she is pointing through gates and like up underneath this hanging eave. And right up there is a little ladybug. And she was like, Adelaide's here with us, Mommy. She wants to see Minnie and Mickey too. And I was like, yeah, she is, because this is what she loved. And I feel like every time she shows up in that way, it is her telling me that, like, yes, that she's there and she's saying hi and that she loves me, but also that, like, I'm doing okay, that I am in the right spot, that that, you know, she's thrilled to have Anessa as her sister, that, you know, in its it's actually only been recently that I feel like she has been sending signs to me directly. And I was on book tour for The Luckiest. We were in California and it was actually supposed to be Anessa or Adelaide's Make-A-Wish trip. We were going to bring her to Epilepsy Awareness Day at Disneyland. And her health was too bad. And she wasn't going to live to make the trip. And so we had to pivot. But it's interesting to me that it was, of all the places on the book tour, it was in California where I feel like she was the strongest. We land in San Diego. I've been to San Diego in years, and we are going to the bookstore, but we have time and we want to grab something to eat. And I'm like looking at the restaurants around the bookstore, and right across the street from the bookstore is a restaurant named Adelaide.
Oh my goodness.
And I was like, what are the freaking odds of that? I was like, okay, baby girl, you're here. I get it. You're with us. And then the very next night we had a book event in Los Angeles. And we get up into these chairs, into these bar stools. And just as the event is about to begin, I sort of look down at the bookshelf, and right at my hip level, there is a book named Adelaide. And I was like, okay, she's right there. She's right in between us, right in between Miguel and I. This book named Adelaide. I didn't even know there was a book named Adelaide. Now we need to read it. TBR. I know one of my friends was in the audience, and she was like, did you see that book? It was right in between you and Miguel. I was like, yes, I saw it. She was like, that was crazy. So she's there and she's with me, and I'm grateful that I still get to feel her, that she gives me these reassuring signs that I'm on the right path, that I'm doing the right thing. I still wish that I don't dream about her as much as I wish I could. I've had a couple dreams about her. My mother dreams about her all the time. She and my mother had such an incredible connection. And so I still think that it's easier for her to make her presence known to me through other people. And I think that's probably like my stubbornness more than anything else. But she will always be with me, and with her brother and her sister, who she never got to physically know, but it doesn't matter. In that spiritual sense, in that soul sense, in that sense that what makes us more than a bunch of matters and cells, that piece of her will always be with me until, you know, our spirits and souls join together again. And how lucky am I that I got to be her mother and that I get to continue to have her with me.
So beautiful. I was just curious, how long before you got, I'm really sorry, I'm drawing a blank. Is it Odessa?
Anessa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how long before you got Anessa did she die?
It was 2 years in between. Okay. Adelaide passed away in 2019, and we got Anessa like 2 years and a week. 2 years, 2 weeks, 2 years and 2 weeks after Adelaide passed away.
So I know that you, I don't know if you would believe this, but I believe this, that she had some influence on her coming. And I believe that they knew each other before and she sent her. So, you know, all of these little signs, I think that she knew her before and she lived with her before, and she knew that, you know, Anessa needed to be there and, yeah, and give you all these little signs. So,
yeah. I want to believe that. I think I have a hard time with that because adoption trauma is so real, and it's hard for me because I'm so grateful to be Anessa's mom, and I'm but that like her family had to break apart so that she could come to us. I would never want Adelaide to be responsible for breaking someone's family up or for someone else's poor decisions just so Anessa could come to us. But I sure am freaking grateful that she's my daughter.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think we, you know, we have 2 adopted kids, and
yeah,
we've had those similar thoughts, is that our greatest gift and blessing is a loss for somebody else, you know, and that's hard to deal with. But
yeah,
we don't necessarily need to get into that. But I did want to say, you've been through some hard, and you said earlier that, you know, losing Elvis, you thought that that was your one hard thing in life, right? And for some reason, I think we all think that, okay, like this is my hurdle. Like this is my,
this is the asteroid that is going to forever change the landscape of your life. And then you discover that those asteroids are not fairly rationed.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, life is never going to get easy. Mm-mm. But I love sitting here and watching and looking at you talk about your grief and your loss and your daughter, and just to see there's still a spark, right? There's some joy there. There's certainly love, but you can still see the grief. And I think in the beginning, it's really hard. You know, when people are grieving, they wonder if they're ever going to get to that place where they can have both grief and joy at the same time. And that's why I love that you're here, able to share your story and to show that, yes, it is possible to have that love and that joy while still being in the grief. And it's beautiful and it's inspiring. I had this thought too. Sometimes when people are going through things, or like for us, when we were going through things, people would say stuff like, God has a plan, you know? And yeah, see,
like a guttural reaction to
right. And but those people that said that to us, they meant well, right?
Yes, 100%. They just don't have the words. They don't have the vocabulary. They don't. We as a culture do not teach people how to communicate and sit with people in their grief in the way that is supportive and is helpful, which is why it's amazing that you two are doing this work and doing this podcast, because I hope that listeners, when they hear people's stories and they learn the words or the actions that can help.
Absolutely. And I've had this thought we've had people on the show that have said this, that I don't know how people can deal with loss without a belief in God or something of that nature. And I've had those same thoughts and feelings, right? But at the same time, I know that there are so many people out there that struggle with the thought of there being a God. And so is that a phrase that is offensive to you, or like how do you get through your grief and your really hard without a belief in God, if that makes sense?
I understand. I completely understand where that thought comes from, but I think that it is sourced in a, I don't I don't have to believe in like an omniscient, omnipresent, God, like singular being to feel like I still have a connection with my daughter, that I can still find purpose in life. I think that a lot of the, I think one of the incredible things that faith provides is community, specifically through church. And I think that that is that, people look to that as well. And we had incredible community. It just wasn't through church specifically. And so I think that what helps people, what people find in God that helps them navigate their grief are all, those are all still the same things that help me navigate my grief. I just call them something different, or they look different in my life, if that makes sense. But I think that we all need the same thing. We all need love and support. We need patient people. We need people who will remember our loved one, who will ask about them, ask what their name was. We need people who will, you know, bring the casserole, or who will hold our hand when the grief erupts within us at the most inconvenient time. Like for me, it's like Christmas Eve. It's been 6 years since Adelaide passed away, but still Christmas Eve, I was a blubbering mess. And my aunt was sitting next to me, and she just held my hand and just sat there, and everyone is around us, but she saw me and she held my hand, and it was those, it's those small actions. It's those small things. And, I find what other people attribute to God, I find it in other places, or it's the exact same thing, and I just view it or call it something different.
Love it. Yep. And you recognize that you've never been alone too.
I do. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like it's not that I don't believe in God. I just don't see it as this singular being who's pulling strings and making decisions. I think that we, all of our spirits, are all of our souls, that they are all a collective energy that is manifesting and moving through the world. And that connectiveness, that connection speaks so much to me, because then I have a direct connection with Adelaide now. I have a direct connection with my grandparents who have passed. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's perfect. And that is what you need, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm not the kind of person that's going to sit here and tell anybody how they need to think or feel, or, you know, we're all on our own journey, and you're beautiful and you're glowing, and I see God in you. So that's,
Thank you. I firmly believe that whatever allows us to be the compassionate, empathetic, like I went to Sunday school every day for about 18 years. So I firmly believe in Jesus's teachings, and try and still live my life to his values. And, I think that regardless of whether we believe that he is the Son of God or any of those pieces, that living to make the world a better place, loving our neighbor as we love ourselves, doing unto others the way we wish to be done unto us, all of that, like what we believe happens after we pass away, or who we believe is in charge up there. I think that at the end of the day, being the best person we can be and leaving this world a better place than we found it, that to me is, maybe that's my religion.
Amen. I love it. Well, Kelly, you've really given a lot of really good advice already. I don't know if there's anything you want to add to that, but.
I would say that, you know, for anyone who is grieving and who is in that darkest place of their loss and their grieving, and I would say, take your time, but that healing is a choice, and that it's okay if you're not ready to make that choice yet, but that it is a choice, and that grief and love are two sides of the same coin, and that they can coexist. And there is nothing more beautiful than when I can think of my daughter and smile. And sometimes that smile is through tears. And that still means that, like I said, on Christmas Eve, I was a blubbering mess. The end of the year always gets me. The thought of having to go through another year without her is so hard. But I still, I love that the healing that I have chosen to do has brought me to a place where I can still think about her and smile, even if it is through tears.
Ugh, you just made me want to be a better mom. I just think about all the things that, you know, I could do more with Reese. You know, she's here and she's 5. And so I'm emotional because I'm just thinking they were, you know, kind of similar age. I'm thinking about Reese at that age. And yeah, so I can't thank you enough. And thank you to Adelaide for letting your mom be on the podcast.
Love when chimes out, letting me know. Yeah.
Well, Kelly, before we go,
yeah,
our final question, we always ask our guests to share one thing that they know to be true.
I know to be true. I do not believe that things happen for a reason, but I do believe that we can make reason out of the things that happen. So because I don't believe that there is a reason good enough that can justify the suffering and Adelaide's short life. Like there's just no reason that I can come up with that could ever justify that. However, I, for the rest of my time on this earth, will make reason out of her loss. And I will raise money for epilepsy research, and I will help others on their grief journeys, and I will share about her, and I will share about Anessa and their special connection, and I will do everything I can to make that reason. And it will never be big enough. It will never be a good enough reason, but I will spend the rest of my life trying to make reason out of it. And that brings me purpose, and it brings me healing, and it brings me closer to Adelaide.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
That was perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Can you share really quick where people can find you and find your books?
Yeah, absolutely. So Instagram and Facebook, I am at KellyGC411, or you can just search up Kelly Cervantes. There aren't that many of us out there. And then I'm also on Substack, and my books are Normal Broken, The Grief Companion for When It's Time to Heal, But You're Not Sure You Want To, and The Luckiest, a memoir of love, loss, motherhood, and the pursuit of self. And they are both available everywhere books are sold: Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, which is a great website that supports independent bookstores. But yeah, they're at Kindle, audio, Audible. I read it. Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you
for joining us. We have been lifted today. It was a great way for us to start our year. So thank you so much.
Appreciate you both so much.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.